actor and comedian Asif Manvi is probably best known for his work as a correspondent on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, acting as the show's senior Middle Eastern correspondent and senior Muslim correspondent, among others.
And while these characters may have helped to shape his career as a TV comedian and actor, they don't necessarily reflect his personal identity. Asif opens up about his life and upbringing in a new collection of personal essays called No Land's Man. Here's Asif Manvi with Jack Black in the trailer for the book.
It's a collection of humorous essays about my life growing up in the U.S., growing up in the U.K., you know, being an immigrant, being Indian, being Muslim, that kind of thing.
What? You're a Muslim?
Yeah, well, I was raised Muslim, yeah.
Are you fasting? I had no idea.
Oh,
I'm so sorry.
No, thank you so much. That's very kind of you, but no, I don't...
And I offered you a brewski! I'm such an idiot!
It's fine!
You need to pray?
Pray?
Yeah.
Right now?
No. Yeah. Because I know you guys pray a lot.
Asif, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So that clip there with Jack Black, it's kind of a running theme in your life. It seems as though people make these assumptions about who you are. You had kids calling you Curry Pot as a nickname when you were growing up in England. You had directors assuming that you would bring your own turban to shoots. How have you dealt with that as an actor and a comedian?
Well, I guess I absorbed it all and then wrote a book about it called No Land's Man. I mean, you know, listen, welcome to being a brown actor in Hollywood and, you know, an immigrant. And, you know, what I tried to do in this book is sort of give my take on the immigrant experience and my comedic take on sort of, you know, life as a brown actor in a sort of Caucasian industry, you know.
Now, you say the question, where are you from, is really complicated for you. You're born in Bombay, grew up in Bradford, England, moved to Florida at the age of 16.
Right.
Why are you stopping and looking back and trying to figure out what home is, what your identity is, what place you're connected to?
You know, it's funny. I started writing this book just because I thought I had some interesting stories, and all of my writing, I have sort of examined the identity issue and the immigrant experience, you know, ever since, from my one-man show to the movies I've written and stuff, and even on The Daily Show sometimes. But, you know, as I explored this, these essays and writing this book, it sort of started to, you know, open up for me, and I started to ask questions, and I ended up writing about things that I never intended to write about when I first set off on this journey of writing a book. So it was really a cathartic experience for me as well.
One of the things you did when you started thinking about home maybe being Bradford, England, was that you decided to go there and revisit where you came from. You were going to return triumphantly. It ended up not really being that. But did you find what you were looking for?
Well, I think, you know, what I ultimately discovered in that journey that I talk about in the book, which is which after 20 years of living in America, I decided to go back to the town that I had grown up in. And that's sort of, you know, is the structure that the book takes in some ways of this journey back home. And I, when I got there, I realized that, you know, I thought I was looking for a place, an identity. You know, I end up sort of one of the last stories, at the place where I first discovered my passion for acting, which is at this little children's theater in the north of England, and it had burnt down, and I stood there in this field, and I sort of had this image of this open field in front of me, and it sort of represented my life in many ways, you know, this idea of having to be an immigrant kid and invent oneself over and over again in new environments, you know, and across three continents.
You got to be an immigrant kid in the UK and here in the US. How did the two experiences compare?
Well, you know, it's funny. I write about this in the book, about the fact that, like, in the UK, I always found that, you know, as much as you if you're an Indian immigrant in England, like, it doesn't matter how long you've lived there, you're always in some ways going to be an Indian immigrant. And then the opposite was sort of true when I got to America, which is, in America, you know, there was a sense of, like, it doesn't matter where you're from. You're an American now. And, you know, like, it doesn't matter that you come from a, you know, a long history and culture. Just pledge allegiance to the flag. And I sort of have this joke about how Americans think about the rest of the world the way New Yorkers think about the rest of America, which is they don't, you know. So it was this sort of sense of suddenly being invisible, but You know, because when I got to America and when my parents moved to Tampa, Florida in the 80s, and, you know, this was a town with one Indian restaurant. So I was the only Indian kid in my entire high school. And so people just thought I was Mexican, you know.
Well, you had early on, getting to the acting part of your life, you had sort of this conversion experience with Omar Sharif, mm-hmm. where you were aiming for Fonz and you ended up sort of veering in another direction. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, you know, I mean, look, I grew up on American pop culture, right? So as a kid growing up in England, I was watching Happy Days. Fonz sort of represented to me what, you know, it was this American image of masculinity. It was sort of James Dean, you know, it was the leather jacket and riding around Milwaukee, Wisconsin on a motorcycle, you know? So that to me was what acting was. It was Hollywood. It was sort of this image that I, and then I saw Omar Sharif, and in this book I talk about the story of how I discovered Omar Sharif, and he was the first brown actor in a Hollywood movie that I saw as a kid who was not playing a servant or a native or a Gunga Din type character. He was like a gentleman, and it sort of gave me the possibility of believing that I could perhaps do that, you know, that it gave me the inspiration, I guess, in the way that, you know, many years ago, Sidney Poitier had represented a sort of inspiration for young African-American actors, you know.
And did you actually meet him, or was that creative license?
Well, I did actually, you know, I spent many years as a waiter in New York City when I first got there, and he was there at a party that I did stare at him across the room. I mean, I'm not going to give away the story, but there was a brief collision between the two of us, yes.
Now, when you did go into acting, you often found that there, as a brown-skinned actor in the United States, there was a set list of parts you were likely to be asked to play. What
right.
kind of roles were out there for you?
Well, I mean, you know, when I first started in this business, it was the typical sort of, you know, there's a story in the book about how I, one of my first auditions in New York City was for a snake charmer in a commercial. And I remember when I went in, they said to me, do you know how to snake charm? And I was so desperate for the job that I actually remember saying to them, you know, I don't, but I'm Indian, so maybe it's in my DNA, you know, and hoping just to get this job. But there was a lot of roles like that where it was, you were basically just stereotyping a cartoon version of your culture. And, you know, there's a word that all us Indian actors used to have at that time and still, you know, have, which is called patanking. And it basically is the sound of the Indian accent to the ear of Westerners, which is like patank, 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 you know. And so that was those are the roles that we went in for, because that's the only thing that was available when I first started out in this business.
Well, let's fast forward a bit to your work on The Daily Show. How has this working on the show been different from some of what you're talking about so far?
Well, The Daily Show came along, you know, and suddenly I was able to, you know, speak. I mean, it's like no other job that exists. You know, I came to The Daily Show as an actor, and I had come from, like, you know, doing theater and stuff like that. And so when I got there, it was kind of it was a way to speak into the zeitgeist in some way, and talk about things in a way that I had never had the opportunity to before. And it was after 9/11. I started on The Daily Show in 2006, and so there was definitely a sense of, you know, speaking about the Middle East and being able to stand on that fence sort of between cultures and talk about America as an insider and an outsider at the same time. And that was a very powerful experience. And it was very interesting to me because as somebody who is raised Muslim, but not really very devout or practicing that much, you know, my parents thought it was absurd that I had been hired to be the senior Muslim correspondent on The Daily Show. In fact, I think my father's first thing he said to me was, is Jon Stewart crazy? Like, what's wrong with this guy, you know? Why would he hire someone who doesn't even know how to say Salaam Alaikum to be his senior Muslim correspondent? And I remember saying, but Dad, you know, it's a comedy show. And he said, well, I hope it's a comedy show. You know? And that was sort of the initial experience. And then over time, you know, they send you out. I ended up talking to a lot of people who were, you know, Islamophobes and kind of talking about the Middle East and all this stuff. And you start to realize that, like, there was a vacuum of that voice into the culture from the perspective of a quote-unquote Muslim, you know? So it was a very sort of bizarre experience, and has always been for me, you know?
And Jon Stewart, I understand that your audition surprised you by not asking for an accent.
Yes. Well, you know, that, again, it goes back to the idea of, like, you know, when you're a brown actor in Hollywood, like, most of the time you go in and they're like, could you do it once with the accent? You know, and then that's the one they end up using. So when John asked me not to do an accent, I was already sold. You know, I was like, well, I'm doing this job, whether we, it was very refreshing and new for me to not be asked to do an accent, you know?
So you're an actor and a comedian, but most of America probably knows you for being funny on TV on The Daily Show. But are there serious mm-hmm. takeaways from this book or changes you'd like to see as an ambassador, I guess, for brown actors and maybe just brown people in America?
Well, you know, look, I mean, there is something about being I hate to call myself any kind of ambassador. You know, what I've been fortunate enough to do is be on a show that speaks into the zeitgeist as much as The Daily Show. And from a cultural perspective, I feel like, you know, as an actor and a comedian, from a cultural perspective, there is a sense of, like, wanting to represent the non-Caucasian actors in a way that we're not represented, really. You know, still a lot of times in Hollywood, you will find that white is the normal, you know, and then everything else. I mean, when I was first going out for auditions, it would be like, you know, me, you know, a fat Greek guy and an Asian woman, you know, and it would just, and they'd be like, if it's not going to be a white guy, then let's just, it's open for anyone, you know, without ever, like, actually specifically identifying an ethnicity of any kind, you would end up sort of just representing some kind of non-Caucasian, you know, sort of point of view that it was just not Caucasian for that moment, you know?
Well, Asif, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That was Asif Manvi, correspondent for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and the author of the new book, No Land's Man.